Okay.
Sorry for the delay. Okay. So today we're going to learn the Refuah Shleimah for those who are injured in the attack, and of course, Le'ilei Nishmas, those who lost their lives. I didn't hear exact details yet. And we're focusing on the next section of the Rambam's Sefer Amada, which is Hilchos Tshuva. And this will bring us to the end of this very important book. And you can't talk, at least I couldn't talk, we can't really talk about Hilchos Tshuva without reflecting on the influence and ideas of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Now, there are many people who shaped the world of Tshuva as we understand it. Rav Kook, of course, wrote a tremendous chibur called Oros HaTshuva. We spoke about that a few years ago in a different context. But for many years, Rav Soloveitchik, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, would deliver a tshuva lecture in New York that was attended by hundreds and hundreds of people. And there was a fellow who attended and edited some of these talks in this volume called Al HaTshuva. His name is Pinchas Pelli. So this is not actually Rav Soloveitchik's own work, but it was a student who edited and organized the material, the ideas that he heard in some of the tshuva lectures, to frame Hilchos Tshuva. So I wanted to focus today on two aspects of the Rambam's Hilchos Tshuva. Rav Soloveitchik quotes that his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and his grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, Zichronim Levracha, every year would study the Rambam's Hilchos Tshuva between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. He wonders out loud if it's just coincidental that the Rambam has 10 chapters in Tshuva, which we'll get to. Those are on the board. We'll get to those in a little bit. But he used to study those between every year between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the 10 days of Aseret Yemei Tshuva, Ben Kesel La'Asar. And he would always come back to the Rambam as his core text for studying the world of Tshuva. So it's really an opportunity for us when we talk about Hilchos Tshuva to understand what was central to Rav Soloveitchik's worldview about Tshuva was this text, the Rambam's Hilchos Tshuva. So the first question that we need to think about, and when you read the Rambam carefully, it's not so clear. This question jumps out at you. Let's start with Halacha Aleph in the first parak of the Rambam, and then we'll go back to the introduction. Usually we read the Koteret first. I want to read just the Rambam first. The Rambam writes the following. Kol ha-mitzvah sheba-Torah, all of the commandments in the Torah, bein asei, whether they are positive, bein lo sa-asei, whether they are negative, im avar adam al achas mehen, if a person violated one of them, bein bezadon, whether it was deliberately, bein bishgaga, whether it was, I would say, carelessly, unintentionally, it's not accidentally, accident, I don't know, you have to ask the insurance people, but I think accident means more like act of God. You know, unintentional means I should have been more careful. I wasn't so careful. That's shogeg. Shogeg is different than onus. Onus means act of God. It wasn't my fault. Kishayase tshuva. When the person does tshuva, v'yashuv mecheto, and he will return from his error, chayov lehisvados lifnei hakel baruchu. He is required to verbalize this process, vidui, meaning vidui dvarim, accounting verbally, before God. Sheneemar, as he quotes the pasuk, isha uisha ki yasu bikol chatos ha'adam, lemol mal bashem. So what would you say? What's the mitzvah in this book, in this section of the book? Right? Acknowledging, right? Is there a mitzvah to do tshuva?
Here it sounds like you just assumed you're going to.
Yeah. No, it says up here. It says
okay, you're jumping, George. I told you I wouldn't hold that for a minute. Smart guy in this year. So let's just look at the content so far. Yeah, what would you say? Paul, you're saying it's an assumption. Kishe.
When he does it, then you do it this way.
Exactly. So that's interesting.
So you expected to do something wrong so you could reach Uber?
Okay, good question. So we know, let's backtrack for a second. Right. We know that there are certain mitzvahs in the Torah that are not supposed to be done unless you have to. Let's say, for example, I don't know, putting somebody to death in the court of law. It's a mitzvah, but we're not looking for people to volunteer for that position. Same thing when it comes to lots of other mitzvahs, that they're not, you know, you do them if you're in that circumstance, the mitzvah of divorce, or other kinds of mitzvahs, that you do them when you're in that circumstance, but it's not laudatory. But here, as you're pointing out, it's not clear from the Rambam that there even is a mitzvah to do tshuva. It just says, when, l'cheshe yase tshuva. So if you look on the next page of your packet, the Minchas Chinuch, which I Xerox copied for you from the Machon Yerushalayim, now the classic edition, authored by a great Galatianish Rav, Rav Yosef Babad. So he had some relatives, I think, in Skokie Yeshiva. Son, grandson, somebody. So he must have been somehow related to the Minchas Chinuch. Must have been a great-grandson or something like that. So he writes, so the Sefer HaChinuch is an anonymously composed volume. We don't know if it was authored, some think it was authored by Rav Aaron Halevi in Spain in the 13th century. Some think it was authored maybe by his brother. We don't know who authored it, but it's a minyan mitzvos. It's a compendium of mitzvos similar to the Rambam, and very often he actually follows the Rambam in terms of which mitzvos he's going to count and why he'll count them and how he'll count them. So on the side of that, I don't know exactly why, but the Minchas Chinuch, Rav Yosef Babad, wrote this classic, amazing commentary, very, very important commentary on the Sefer HaChinuch, and usually he will reflect also on the Rambam. So in the way that he organizes the Sefer HaChinuch, it's by Parsha. So in Parshas Naso, well, what's in Parshas Naso? What does that have to do with anything? Well, if you go back to the Rambam, the Rambam quoted the verse we just said, Isha Isha Kiyasa Mikol Chatos HaAdam Limol Mal BaHashem. That's a pasuk from Parshas Naso. So, now, not surprising to see the connection between the Sefer HaChinuch and the Rambam. The Sefer HaChinuch in the Parsha of Naso tells you what's, you see on the top, Mitzvah Shin Samach Dalet 364, Vidui al Hachet. So that's very interesting. Right? It's consistent with the Rambam. And when you think about that now, if somebody would have asked you, you might have said, well, maybe I should have put the mitzvah of tshuva in the beginning of Vayikra, where you talk about karbonos. Maybe I would have put it in Parsha Shlach, where you have other karbonos about, you know, Avodah Zarah, things like that. Maybe I would have put it in Parshas Nitzavim Vayelech, where we talk about tshuva. No. It appears here in the context of Parshas Naso. And so the Sefer Minchas Chinuch, on the side of the Sefer Chinuch, says, he quotes the Rambam, he cites the Rambam, and he says, it sounds to me like from the words of the Rambam, now top of the page, just the top right, you see where it's top line? De mitzvahs asei dekan, the commandment here, eina hatshuva, is not the tshuva. Rak havidui bepeh, it is the verbalizing with your mouth. That's the mitzvah. Digzeres hakasavi, that it is a decree from the pasuk. De'im misnachem me'achet, if a person has remorse, they feel bad for what they did. Tzorech lehisvados befiv, they have to verbalize it with their mouth. Kechol mitzvah sasei shetulim bedibur, like all other mitzvahs that are recitations. Like kegon kriyashma, just like kriyashma. So that's very interesting. Do you have to do tshuva? No, you don't. It's just that when you do tshuva, when you feel bad, and when you come back, so then you have to do vidui. That's the first approach here, which is very interesting. And I think, you know, to think about it from a personal perspective, you know, people in a different context, Rav Soloveitchik mentions this mashal, a person sometimes could they get themselves into a fine mess, so to speak. the fine mess we've gotten ourselves into. And then they realize that. So the immediate instinctual reaction is going to be to figure out how to get out of it. So our natural state, who we really are, be'etzim, we are neshamas that are close to Hashem. And then sometimes we find ourselves in a little bit of a mess. So do you need somebody to tell you to get out of a mess? You don't need a mitzvah to tell you to get out of a mess. You know that just instinctually. You know that from the soul that speaks to us, from the pintle yid that burns within us. You know, Lahavdil, the Rav Soloveitchik uses the mashal of the shikor later in a different context. But imagine a person who went and got drunk and they're totally disgusting and they're full of vomit. You know, do you need to call them and tell them to go take a shower? Right? You don't need to instruct someone to do that. Any normal person knows that they need to get themselves cleaned up after they feel like a mess. So there is no requirement for the Torah to tell us, get yourself cleaned up. You should feel like a mess. That's the first perspective. But Rav Soloveitchik did not accept this. He thought it was very difficult. How could it be that the Torah doesn't actually tell us to return? And there's so many different psukim. So many mefarshim say, well, when those psukim say, v'shavta ad Hashem Elokecha, you will return, that's not a commandment. That's not prescriptive. That's descriptive. You will return. So when it says in the pasuk, you know all those psukim in the end of Sefer Devarim, when you return, that's just telling you what will happen. It's not telling you, I, Reuven, ben Etzion HaKohen, when I make my cheshbon, I have to do tshuva, and the Rambam tells us all the steps which we'll get to. It's just telling you that's what will happen. And Rav Soloveitchik says that's very difficult. And then you have the kasha from George Lennon, the koteret. What does the Rambam say in the introduction? Mitzvahs asei achas. There is one positive mitzvah here, back on the first page, vihi, and that is, sheyoshuv hachote mecheto lefnei Hashem, that the errant one should return from his mistake before God, which we didn't focus on this, but this, by the way, is a beautiful aspect of tshuva, that the Rambam, you notice how he said it twice. He says it here, and he said, L'chai v'svadas l'fnei ha-keil baruch hu. You speak before God when you are misvada. V'yisvada, and verbalize it. So here it's clear, right? It's a mitzvah, as I say, shel vidui. So Rav Soloveitchik presents a different formulation for the Rambam. And this has ramifications. Turn to the third page. I gave you one selection here from Alat Tshuva. Before we see it inside, Rav Soloveitchik here distinguishes between two concepts which exist in other areas of halacha. For example, let's say you move into a new house, or let's say a mezuzah in your own house falls down. So for whatever reason, I'm visiting your house, and you say, oh, why don't you do the honor of putting up the mitzvah in my house? It's a beautiful thing to put up a mitzvah, the bezuzah, excuse me. So let's say I come to your house, and I take the hammer, and I nail it in, I affix the mezuzah to your door. Who, so to speak, gets the mitzvah? Who gets credit for the mitzvah? Right? Why is the Baal HaBayis getting the credit? That's right. It's his house. It's not my house. I'm not obligated to put a mezuzah on your house. And yet, when I put the mezuzah on your house, Rav Schechter points out, I make the bracha, according to Rav Soloveitchik. Because I did what's called the Maisa HaMitzvah, the action of the mitzvah. So you have the obligation, and you get the fulfillment. And maybe you could even say, one could suggest, that I'm your shaliach, I'm your emissary. But at the end of the day, I did the action. So there's a maisa ha-mitzvah, there's the action of the mitzvah, and then there's the kiyum ha-mitzvah. So this is discussion achronim, Rav Schechter assumes from Rav Soloveitchik that the bracha goes with the action. So even though I'm not fulfilling the mitzvah, you're fulfilling the mitzvah because it's your house. I make the bracha on the mitzvah.
it's funny. I should know this, but I can't remember. So in a bris milah.
Yes.
Okay, so the mal does the maisa. Who makes the bracha?
So there are two brachas. There's the berachas hamitzvah, and then there's the berachas hashevach. Let's assume that it's berachas hashevach. It's a complicated question whether the bracha of lachniso bevisa shalav ravino, what kind of bracha that is. It's a big controversy in the Rishonim. But let's assume for a second that it's a blessing of praise and thanks. So the father makes that bracha after. So he's supposed to, there's a question, maybe that's a berachas hamitzvah, so then what they try to do is they tell the father to make the bracha right away so that it's after the milah, before the priya, but let's assume that it's after for a second. Oftentimes, by the time he gets around to it, it's afterwards, and nobody says anything. But the person who makes the first bracha, al hamila, is the moel.
Right,
he does the maisa mitzvah. And who's getting the kiyama mitzvah?
Yeah.
So that's a complicated story. The child is getting a kiyama mitzvah. He probably doesn't know it right now. He feels it, but he doesn't know it. The father's getting a kiyama mitzvah. What kiyama mitzvah exactly? Each one of those is a complicated question, but that's a good example where the moel makes the bracha, but really he's doing the action. He's not really getting the mitzvah, so to speak. He's just an agent on behalf of the father, which is a good question in general. There's a tshuva in the tshuvas of Rav David Tzvi Hoffman called Melamed Lahoel, where he talks about this question about, is it even possible to make somebody a shaliach to do a mitzvah? Like, how does that work? You know, if you're not me, then, because there's certain things that don't lend themselves to a shaliach. You know,
you can't make somebody a shaliach for an aveira.
Okay, that's for sure true.
Yes.
But there's also, let's say, my grandfather, Zichron Levracha, when he was older, so before he passed away, so he had a stroke right before my bar mitzvah. So at certain points, he had difficulty tying his tefillin. So I would, when I had the privilege, so sometimes I would go to visit him and we'd spend a lot of time together. So I would put on his tefillin for him, you know, if he couldn't put on his own tefillin. So who got the mitzvah of tefillin then? Well, he got the mitzvah of wearing the tefillin. And, you know, if he could kind of manage it, so he would technically tie the tefillin, but sometimes I would tie the tefillin. So I was doing the kshira, but could you say the following? Let's say he was too ill one day, God forbid, and I couldn't put the tefillin on his arm. Can I put the tefillin on my arm for him? No. You can't make a shaliach for that. That's a mitzvah shebeguf. It has to be on you. So you can have somebody else do the tying, but they can't do the wearing. You know, you can't be a shaliach to wear tzitzis for me. You could tie tzitzis for me, but you can't wear tzitzis for me. Anyway, this is all identifying, and this is a really important conversation, is that different mitzvahs have different components to them. So the same thing exists, Rav Soloveitchik says, on a deep level, let's say for davening. There's the mechanical aspect of davening, but then there is the kiyum ha-mitzvah, the soul of the mitzvah, the true accomplishment of the mitzvah. And what is that? That's the experience of being in the presence of Hashem. So doing the thing is the saying the words, but that's not really the kiyum. The fulfillment of davening is being in the presence of God. Another expression of this distinction, in a different way, but very similar, avelos rachmana litzlan. Right? Avelos, there is stuff that people do during avelos, you know, sitting on the floor and wearing a torn shirt and a whole bunch of other things. But that's not the essence of avelos. The essence of avelos is the feeling. It's the experience of feeling what it means to have that loss, rachmana litzlan, meditating on it. So the way you give it expression is in those things that you do, but the things are different from the kiyum shebelev, the feeling that you have. You know, another example might be sheva brachos. So technically, the expression of sheva brachos for a newly married couple is in the blessings, seven blessings that you say. But that's giving expression to a deeper experience. So when you daven, you go through the formal technical maisa ha-mitzvah, but what you're experiencing is the kiyum ha-mitzvah being lifnei Hashem, so to speak. Each one of these, you could find differences, but they share the same idea.
So it's the machshava?
Right.
So if you go to shul and you're doing you have your lulav and esrog, and you're just going through the motions, you're not really thinking about it. you say the bracha, so, but you're not. Your
great.
Mind is,
oh, very good.
I mean, it happens all the time. With
yeah. So each mitzvah. So when it comes to lulav, you could say, look, lulav. Really, the mitzvah of lulav is just the shaking. So if I, as long as I was conscious, I wasn't misasik, I knew I was shaking a lulav, so you check the box. But for davening, one might claim that if on Friday night I'm doing this, which may or may not happen on occasion, so then when that happens, or when you're...
There's a YouTube video about that.
Oh, yes? So
when you do this on Shabbos, you start going...
So you, exactly. It's yeah. The cough.
Yeah.
Or you take three steps back, and then you realize, wait a second, was I just saying Shmona Esrei? I just took three steps back. I don't know where I'm coming from. So that's a good question. You did the Ma'isa Mitzvah, but the Kiyama Mitzvah you didn't get. You didn't get the Kiyama Mitzvah of Avodah Shebelev. So Rav Soloveitchik suggests that that's the same thing when it comes to tshuva. Shita Zu says, look on the bottom. Anemotzim gam milchas tshuva. Tshuva... Be'enei HaRambam. Now the underlines here, this is Nechama's old Ala Tshuva, so the underlines are hers. I can't tell you exactly what they correspond to. You have to ask her for a shiur on Ala Tshuva, which she probably won't give you, but she could. Tshuva Be'enei HaRambam, hi me'en avodah shebelev. Zui mitzvah she'ikara einu b'maizim u'pu'ulos. This is a commandment that its central principal point is not in actions, and in activities, ela b'tahalich hanimshach le'itim al pnei shnos chayim, tahalich shetchilaso b'charata b'regesh ashma. It's a process that takes time, that develops over the person's life, that begins with feelings of guilt, b'hakaras ha'adam ki nitla tachlis mechayav. A person recognizes that they've lost the way of their life. They've lost their telos, their vision, their destiny. They've abandoned themselves. Behargasha shel bedidus, a person feels alone and lonely. Shel tiya v'tiya, of wonder, of like wandering and wonderment, wandering in the sense of, oh man, what happened? Bewilderment, maybe better. Shel pshitas regel in Hebrew is an expression. When a person goes broke, when their business fails, when you go bankrupt. It's called lifshot et haregel, pshitat regel. So Rav Soloveitchik says a person feels emotionally, morally bankrupt. That's where it starts. V'darko shel talich ze aruka aruka ad letachashi hatshuva atzma. So hatshuva eina kshur b'maise echad. The tshuva is not tied in one specific thing. Umachria elatzomachas ugedela. It grows within a person. It's a process. Smicha itis umuusheches. It's like a plant. You know, it's not that one day you go out to your tomato plants and here are tomatoes that didn't exist there yesterday. They grow ever so slowly. Ad she top of the next column. Ad shemivia sa'odam lemetamorphazia. Morph, whatever the spelling over here. That's called metamorphosis. And then, after that, you arrive at tshuva. Uma maisa tshuva, havi omer zevidui. So when the Rambam says, when kishe yasa tshuva v'yoshev mecheto, the Rambam is saying, the Rambam needs to give you, he's trying to educate you as to what is the maisa ha-mitzvah. But in the introduction, he's giving you what is the hagdara of the mitzvah. The hagdara of the mitzvah is Sheyashav, is to go through this process. But as in all aspects of Yados, it's not enough just to tell us this is a concept. There has to be an action. There has to be a way for it to be expressed in the real world, in real time, by real people. And I saw this in a in an introduction of a book authored by Dr. Belkin, where he points out that Judaism is not so much, we're not so interested in... in just the theoretical principles of faith. It was interesting that when we saw Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, even there, the Rambam was careful in terms of how he formulated the Yisodei HaTorah. So tshuva, while it is in the book of Mada, it's a very practical thing. And and you can't legislate a metamorphosis in somebody's personality. You could tell people to articulate it, to verbalize it, so that they own it, so that they could stare it in the face and understand it. And then through that, the Rambam says, Umahi hatshuva. So the Rambam then gives you the steps. This is the first thing to know about tshuva, the Rambam says. That the core of tshuva is the kiyum. It's the transformation that comes through going through the process of tshuva. And that's maybe why tshuva, the Rambam says, has steps. Most mitzvahs that you do, they don't have steps. Right? You light candles, and that's it. You light the Shabbos candles, the Hanukkah candles, you just light them and you're done. You don't have four steps to eating matzah. You eat the matzah. But there are four steps to tshuva. The Rambam will tell us. There is azivas hachet, stop doing what you're doing if it's not right. Then there's charata, having remorse for what you did. Kabbalah lahaba, committing not to doing it again. And vidui. So what is the significance of that? Is it just, it happens to be a mitzvah with multiple components? Or is this expressing the same idea that Rav Soloveitchik is saying, that tshuva is a process? It's not something that you do and then it's over. It's a process. So you start here and then you move there, and it's a growth process over time. And that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to grow through the process of tshuva, to transform yourself. That's observation number one. Observation number two is on the wall in our color-coded pages for all the artists out there. The Rambam has 10 chapters in the Laws of Tshuva. He begins with chapter 1 in the purple with kapara. What is kapara? I don't know how to translate kapara. It's a hard word to translate. Kapara, I guess you could translate it as atonement. But lechaper really means to remove.
Like cover over.
Okay. So maybe it means to cover over. In this context, it probably means to remove. Lashon siluk, as Rashi points out in one place. So the purpose of tshuva is to get kapara, is to remove the stains, to remove these problematic barriers that stand between us and ourselves and us and Hashem. So to do that, you need to do tshuva. So tshuva is an essential, indispensable part of kapara, which is part, by the way, that's part of the discussion there in the Minchas Sinai, between the relationship between tshuva and kapara. In the old days, the reason why this comes up here in this context, the Rambam talks about the avoda of Yom Kippur. In the old days, you had another mechanism for kapara, that was a karban. Now, a karban is not a shortcut against tshuva, it works together with tshuva to create a kapara. So in some metaphysical way that I don't understand, the Rabbeinu Shalom created the world that you can take an animal, offer it as a sacrifice, combine that with your tshuva, and receive kapara. After the Beis HaMikdash is gone, if you notice, we say this in the liturgy on Yom Kippur, in that time of year, we say, well, today we don't have any more. Ein lanun lo ishim velo asham, a whole bunch of things that we don't have, so we're lacking to achieve kapara, to really get rid of those averos through that process. Which is why, if you lived in, I don't know, the 12th century or the 13th century, the 14th century, if you were Hasidi Ashkenaz, you would find ways to approach kapara in a different avenue. We're very influenced by the Rambam, but if you were Hasidi Ashkenaz, you know, today might be a good day, or even yesterday would be a better day, to put on a pair of shorts and sit outside for a couple of hours with your feet in a bucket of water. Tshuva Samishkal. That was... Why is that? Because that's an action that you'll do that's focused on kapara, to expunge the averus by, I don't know, wearing a shirt that has broken glass inside of it. I haven't done this, but if you look in the Sfarim, old Hasidic Ashkenaz from many years ago, this is what they did. So Dr. Schneer Lyman, Shalom Me Well, Professor Lyman, he points out in one of his shiurim that this is a key emphasis in terms of distinction. They're emphasizing the role of kapara, so they're going to do something similar to a karban to achieve a kapara, whereas the Rambam saying today, and many others, we're taking the approach that today you don't have really the avenues to develop in terms of kapara, so we focus on tshuva. But the Rambam, Perek Aleph, is discussing tshuva as a part of the process of kapara. That's what you're going to try to get to. That's the first thing. Then the Rambam goes to Perek Beis, where he focuses on the ABCs of tshuva. So, mahi tshuva, what is tshuva? So the Rambam describes the top tshuva, we call it like platinum tshuva maybe. What's platinum tshuva? When you're in the same circumstance, with the same conditions, in the same frame of mind, with the same A, B, C, D, everything is the same, and this time, right, you make the right choice. You do the right thing. So that's platinum tshuva. It's not a chiddush. A person does an avera when they're, you know, 25 years old.
Yeah.
That's a good question. Good question. How that tshuva plays? That's a good question. You know, Rabbi Foreman has a lot to say about that. So do Chazal. Somebody's 25 years old and he does some aveira, then he goes to do tshuva when he's 92 years old. So the tshuva is a little bit different. It's not you do tshuva. You can do tshuva, but it's not the same quality tshuva. It's not the same kind. It's a different kind of transformation. Then the Rambam tells you, well, what kind of a person? How do you do tshuva? In the sense of, how do you conduct yourself as a person who is a Baal tshuva? And by the way, if you're not a Baal tshuva, then you have a problem, right? We just said it's a mitzvah to do tshuva. It's a kiyum d'oraisa to do tshuva. So I don't know about anybody else, but I'm certainly, hopefully, a Baal tshuva. I can't say that I am yet, but I would like to be a Baal tshuva one day. I would very much like to be one. So then the Rambam says, you know, when's a good time to do tshuva? Well, any time is a good time to do tshuva. Today, great time for tshuva. Go home, like, you know what? Today I'm going to do tshuva. But you should know, the Rambam says, there's one specific time that's really a good time to do tshuva. If you don't do it then, it's not so good. When's that? Yom Kippur. And that's why the Rambam, in this context, tells you in Halacha Zayin, Yom HaKippurim, that's Zman tshuva. That is the time. Don't miss it. Okay, if you didn't have a chance to do it yesterday, make sure when Yom Kippur rolls around, you do it then. Then the Rambam in Perek Gimel, on the red page right there, I guess you could call it, the Rambam talks about the status of a person, or the impact of tshuva, in terms of the 50-50, right? The person should always see themselves as if they're half over here and half over there, and that this is their matzav beinoni, they're in this in-between state, and the tshuva is part of the process to move the person in that direction. And then the Rambam goes on to, you know, the different categories of people. So he talks about people who don't have Olam Haba. So different people are going to be in need of different kinds of tshuva. Then he goes to Perek Dalet, where he talks about impediments to tshuva. What he calls the 24 ingredients to a disaster. If you have these, you have a lot of problems. 24 things impede a person, ma'ak v'nesa tshuva. So, for example, somebody who tries to stop, to trip somebody else up, that's a bad thing to do, just in general. And it's also something that's going to impede your process of tshuva. Or somebody who distances themselves from the community, porish midarkei tzibur. It says, I don't have anything to do with any community, I'm just by myself. Somebody who disrespects the rabbis. A lot of different things, they're not good. So the Rambam puts them here, so you should just know. You want to get kapara, you want to do tshuva, this is how you do it. This is the impact of it in terms of where you are holding. And then, these are the things that are going to keep you from doing that. Until this point, so far, the flow looks good, colors are good, I like it. Then we get to number 5. The Rambam tells us in Perek Hey, Rishus kol adam nesuna lo. Every person has rishus, has permission. It's called the doctrine of free will. The Rambam spends a whole chapter and then another chapter developing the doctrine of free will. Free will part 1, free will part 2, and the Rambam elaborates, you know, what does it mean to have free will? That it's not just a command from God, it's built into the Bria, that the Ribbono Shel Olam set it up that way. Otherwise, it would be a lack of humanity, we wouldn't have our ability to make choices, bechir chavshis, mitzvos, which people are beyond, is it possible to be beyond the possibility to have free choice? Perek Vav, what about Moshe and Paro? A whole discussion about free will, that's in the black, in 5 and 6. Then, the Rambam has a shift to the blue column, 7. The Rambam writes on the next page that you have in front of you, on page 4, Hoil, since Urishus Nesuna, Urishus Kol Adam Nesuna Lo Kamosha Biarnu, since every person has permission, as we spoke, Yishtadel HaAdam Lasas Tshuva V'Linor Kapo Mechatov, a person should strive, should work hard to do tshuva, etc. So now the Rambam spends a chapter again talking about the transformation of tshuva. But the language here is very significant. Ho'il. Due to the fact that. Interesting. So two things are now striking. The first is, those two pages, Free Will and Free Will Part 2, in the black, do these belong here? I'm not sure, because the next segment, after the Rambam goes back through the transformation, he talks in 8 about Olam Haba, which is in the brown, and then in the yellow, I can't even read it anymore. What did I write there? It's probably Scharva Onesh, right? Scharva Onesh is number 9 in the yellow, and then number 10 is Ideal Avodas Hashem. Ram talks about Ava, which is obviously, you know, connected to Tshuva Me'ava. So all of these things, a person, when he does Tshuva, so he merits Olam Haba, makes sense why it belongs there. Why is free will, the doctrine of free will, if the Rambam thinks that it's so crucial for a basic principle understanding of Yadas, why is it in Hilchos Tshuva and not back in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah? Basics of the religion. Why did he put it here? He should have put it there. And the Rambam sticks it in the middle. Why is it in the middle? If it has to do with tshuva, maybe it should be at the beginning. But then, the kicker is that the Rambam, he says, Hoel, since we have chapters 5 and 6, therefore, we're going to go back again. And if you look carefully, they're formed differently, because they're going to, as we'll see, they're making different points. There are actually parallels between the blue in number 7 and the blue in number 2, in terms of how that person changes and what happens to them. So Rav Soloveitchik develops this in a very long section in Ala Tshuva as well. And we've mentioned it before, Rav Shagar. So here in this work, this is called Shuvi Nafshi, which is a selection of discourses on Tshuva. So he has a chapter here where he talks about different models of understanding Tshuva. So in this, what he calls Iyun b'machsheves ha-tshuva shel Hagrid Soloveitchik, analysis of Rav Soloveitchik's understanding of Tshuva, he drills deep into this idea, and I heard a similar discussion based on a talk given by Rav Meir Tversky, Rav Soloveitchik's grandson, one of the Rosh Yeshiva in YU. They all are developing and emphasizing this aspect of Tshuva that the Rav developed based on the Rambam, on this diuk, these questions that he raises on the Rambam. And he says something absolutely incredible. He said there are two kinds of tshuva. We go back to where we started. You need to take the person, Rachmana Litzlan, who's hungover and drunk and filthy, and so they wake up, and what's their immediate reaction? They got to take a shower. They got to take a shower. They got to get out of this bar. They got to get home. So that is tshuva. It is. You're not doing it anymore. You're feeling bad about yourself. You can't believe you're in this state. You're cleaning yourself up, and you say, you know what? I'm not going to do this again. But that's very different than a person who sits down and realizes that there are root causes to how they got into this predicament, and that this is a lifestyle and a personality that they don't want to be, and they don't want to let them slip into that. They want to take ownership of their life and make different kinds of choices in the future. Not just because they feel disgusting about who they became, but because now they want to really make an informed decision, a proactive choice that owns their life in a different kind of way. Not just because, well, I didn't like that, so my instinctual reaction is to get away from it. It's like somebody who puts their hand near something hot, so you recoil. It's not just that reaction. It's the reaction that I have more meaning, I have more purpose, and I want to make choices. I want to create a life for myself that's not that. That's Bechira Chafshis. There are two kinds of tshuva, Rav Soloveitchik says. There's basic tshuva. Everybody can do basic tshuva. Everybody should do basic tshuva, and basic tshuva is essential. And that's almost, you can call it instinctual tshuva. But then there's another kind of tshuva. It's the tshuva, you could frame it, he calls the tshuva of geula, the tshuva of destiny, where you own your destiny, because you say that is a different kind of life, and that's the kind of life that I want to lead, not the kind that I just was in this particular area, whatever, however it relates to this issue. And so because of that, the Rambam introduces free will in tshuva. It's taking ownership of the actions that you did, it's the relationship to it, and the choice to make your life different. That's actually part and parcel of the high-level tshuva. Rav Shagar actually suggests, he contrasts this view of tshuva with Hermann Cohn, who was a significant German philosopher, German-Jewish philosopher, who actually was the subject of Rav Soloveitchik's PhD in the university in Berlin, which was the philosophy of Hermann Cohn. So they both focus on the ani in tshuva, but according to Rav Soloveitchik, it's not so much that the yachid expresses his uniqueness by taking responsibility, rather, it's the choice of who is ani, that it's the bechira ba'atzmiyusa hanasunim beirosh. It's the fact that you have that bechira chafshis, that's what makes you into the ani. And then with that, you can believe in tshuva and geula and all that. So it's the fact that there is free will, the fact that you have that free will, that enables you to do the tshuva. What kind of tshuva? The higher level tshuva. And that's why in Perek Zayin, look on numbers, page 4, in Halacha Zayin, Kama Ma'ula Maila Sa'tshuva. How lofty is tshuva? Emesh, last night, Toyozem moved on Me'a Hashem Elokei Yisrael. This person was distant from God. Shenema Avonoseichem Ayum Avdila Beneichem Levein Elokeichem. Soik Ve'en Onene. You screamed, God didn't listen to you. You did mitzvahs, God threw them away, etc. Okay? V'hayom, three lines later, three words at the end of the line, in the middle of Halacha Zayin. V'hayom, today, hu mudbak v'shechina. You are connected with the Shechina. Shenemar v'atem hadveikim. Davik is like glue. Soik v'nene, you call and God answers you immediately. And not only that, you do mitzvahs, osa mitzvahs, a kabbalah, osa menachas, a simcha. God celebrates your mitzvah. He hugs them. He holds on to them. So that didn't happen in tshuva and perek beis. Tshuva and perek beis, you went through the process. You're right. You got kapara. You got forgiven. Let's move on. But through the transformation of tshuva, and maybe Rav Soloveitchik alludes to this idea, maybe you can call this the difference between tshuva meyira, out of fear, versus tshuva me'ava, of wanting to create a relationship, the relationship that you have is different with Hashem. That's the tshuva of bechira chafshis. It's the tshuva of choice. That now, by doing that, it's not just that you squared away the books. It's like you have an accountant, so he says, let's settle up the ledger. Tshuva number one is, let's settle up the ledger. So we settled it. Tshuva number two is, it's a poetic description here. What is the Rambam describing? He's describing poetry. He's describing destiny. That now, so to speak, you and Hashem, you're tight. You have this closeness. So much so that when you pick up the phone, he's right there. He wants to answer. Because it's about a transformation. And maybe this brings us back to where we started. Rav Soloveitchik, in different years, looked at it from different perspectives, but I think they're connected to each other. Maybe you could suggest, borrowing the terminology just b'derech mashal, tshuva number one, that's like the maisa tshuva. That's the action. So you went through the process. But tshuva number two, that's the ultimate kiyum. That's the ultimate personal transformation. And that stems from free will. That stems from the bechira chafshis that's given to the person. It's because we have bechira chafshis that we can make that choice. We can create that life for ourselves. And that is what leads you to the Olam Haba, the Schar Va'onesh, and ultimately, in Perek Yud, the Tshuva Me'ava, the aspirational life. You know, in Halacha, in Perek Beis, so then we have to talk about, okay, after that, you know what we're going to talk about? 50-50. Where are you on the scale? Because we're going metrics here. And then we're going to talk about the Dvarim HaMa'akvin as a Tshuva, because you're going through the technical process, the Tshuva Me'ira. the mechanistic tshuva, so to speak, which is important, and halavai we should reach that level. But the second level, the poetry, the art, the aspirational tshuva, the tshuva of destiny, you're not talking about 24 things that stop tshuva, because that's tshuva from Bechir Chavcha. So you know what we're going to talk about that? We're going to talk about a relationship. We're going to talk about connection. We're going to talk about Olam Haba. It's a totally different kind of tshuva. So I wonder, yes?
You know, the thing that struck me about this is it's not like you got somebody who's not davening, who's
yes.
not doing mitzvahs. He says, you're doing mitzvahs, he throws them away. You're davening, so it's and so it's something else. It's your attitude. All
yes.
of a sudden you have... You
it's
have
the relationship.
It's a relationship. That's what the tshuva is about.
Yes.
You did a business before, you davened before, but the relationship has changed.
Exactly. And that is an expression of the Bechira Chavshis. Not so much about checking the boxes. Exactly. That's the suggestion. I think the two ideas that Rav Soloveitchik presents, somehow I think they kind of fit together. The idea of the Maisa tshuva and the Kiyama tshuva fits with this idea about tshuva number one, like basic tshuva, versus tshuva number two of personal ownership of Kiyam HaMitzvah.
So tshuva number two,
yes.
you have to be in that position again to really kick in,
so,
or not necessarily?
I don't think so, because it's a different kind of tshuva.
I mean,
you know,
get
yes.
full kapara if you're never ever in that instance again. I mean, Adam and Chava, would they get full kapara for what they did? They were never in that position again.
So the Rambam says... Even for Adam and Chava, even for an older person, the Rama says expressly, nonetheless, Mo'eles hilo ubal tshuvahu. Yes, you get full tshuva. That's the story of this this very colorful character who appears in the Talmud, who visited all kinds of women, all kinds of lifestyles that we shouldn't talk about or think about. And then the Gemara says at the end of his life, Yesh kono olam hasho achas. This is al regal achas because we're running late. So the Gemara says he's mezumen l'chay olam haba. Yes, you can do tshuva even if you led a whole miserable life that was completely wretched spiritually. It works. But I think what you're pointing out is that tshuva that comes from transformation, because it's about the relationship, it transcends the question of the circumstance that you're in. A person... And we can aspire to this idea. If a person really does mamash tshuva me'ava from a standpoint of bechira chavshis, then you don't need to be in the same circumstance that the Ribbono Shlom should clearly see that you're not that anymore, because you've transformed yourself completely through your tshuva me'ava, through your this whole transformation. Right? It makes sense why in tshuva number two, when you're doing the bean counting, when you're doing the, you know, the measuring, so then we're going to look at, are you in the same place or you're not in the same place. But in tshuva, in Perek Zion, this kind of tshuva, you know, it's totally transformational. And that's maybe why Rav Soloveitchik also points out, when it comes to Perek Zion, the Rambam talks about tshuva from Midos.
Then how can you ever put anybody to death? They're going to say, oh, I killed you.
You're right.
I am really sorry.
So the Minchas Chinuch raises that point, and he says, you're right. There you have to distinguish between tshuva and onesh, where the person becomes a bal tshuva, and nonetheless, they still have to get that punishment. That's part of their kapara. And that's true why, when a person brings a karban, they have to do the tshuva, because they go together. Or the same thing for Malkus, if a person gets lashes. They will do tshuva before. They'll say, when the Bezin brings him to get Malkus, they'll say, Vahu rachum yechaper avon, the person is supposed to do tshuva, they're supposed to, the mitzvah is for them to say vidui. So there's two aspects. There's the tshuva, the transformation of the person, but then there is the consequence that you have to have. And when it's legislated ben adam lachavero, the Bezin has to carry it out. It's the same thing like, if I punch somebody in the nose, so I need to repair that relationship, but I also have to pay their deductible when they get to the ER, because I broke something that I have to fix. So Kivyachal Hashem says to us, look, there's two aspects of this. We have a relationship aspect, and then there's the consequence aspect of it that you have to fix. So the Ribbono Shel Olam structured it so that, which is a mystery that will, you know, only an Olam HaEmes will figure out. It's so interesting to know which Averos have Karbanos, which Averos have punishments from Hashem, because the punishments from Hashem, he settles them in different ways. So it's two different planes. A guy says to a woman at a bar, these things can only happen at a bar, I guess. Harei amekudeshesli amenasha ani tzadik. You are married to me on the condition that I am a tzaddik. And you know the guy's mamash a gangster. So the Minchas Chinuch on this mitzvah raises the point that you made based on that Gemara. He says, when it comes to tshuva, tshuva can take place in your heart, in your soul. So you don't know if the second that gangster walked in the bar, he had a change of heart, and now he's a tzaddik. And so the Gemara says, choshishin lekidushin. You need to get misafik. Now, does that mean that that person doesn't need to be held accountable for their crimes? No, of course he needs to be held accountable, but he could still be begeder, quote-unquote, a tzaddik, a baal tshuva, because of what's in his heart. And the Minchas Chinuch emphasizes that, because especially in his view, remember, he thinks that according to the Rambam, tshuva itself is not a mitzvah. It makes sense, because tshuva is in your heart. It's something that only you know. So you go through that process of tshuva, and you know, you say the girl is mekudeshes. So it's two tracks. You still need to punish the person for the consequence for the thing that they did, but we view them as a total baal tshuva.
It's sort of the opposite of the way we think of punishment, because we think of punishment creating the tshuva, where it's there's tshuva and then consequence.
Right. And we have to think about tshuva first, because in a lot of times we never get to the consequence part of it. That's what I mentioned before about tshuva samishkal. Those Hasidic Ashkenaz are deep into the spiritual world, so they're trying to fix the damage. Look, I don't know how to fix the damage. I don't know. All I know is what the Rambam says is do tshuva. And hopefully, the Ribbono Shel Olam will settle the damage everywhere else. So that's the relationship. It goes back to that original, the first parak of the Rambam, and that's probably why he puts it first, is that we should understand there's a difference between tshuva and kapara. And they go hand in hand. When the Kohen would bring the karban, the Bailim would do the vidui. And that's why the context of the vidui is here in Perek Aleph of Ki Yasim Kalchata Sa'odam V'Oshima Nefeshahi V'Svadu Eschatasim Asher Asa. And then the Rambam talks about the Karbonos of Yom HaKippurim Sor HaMishtalech in Perek Beis. That's the goat that was used to create the atonement. Alright? Shkoyach, everyone.
I read a classic example of what the Karbonos could be in Yom Kippur. This week's Parsha.